This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Okay, well, now it is well and truly midnight here in New York City, and you are tuned to listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM, and that was a rebroadcast of the evening news, Con su edición en español, informativo, followed by some very important announcements. So that means that without further ado, and if all goes according to plan, it's time for this. Moorish. Orthodox. Radio. Crusade. Anarchism for the global city. Radical environmentalism for the concrete jungle. Esoteric explorations of the secret history of rebel culture. The Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Welcome aboard to the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. With me, Bill Weinberg, and we're joined tonight by Andrew Muhab El-Kadi. Welcome aboard, Andrew.
Hey, how you doing, Will?
And that was the sounds of Simon Shaheen and that we just heard. Dance Mediterranea was the name of that cut. Now, what's the name of the album, Andrew?
The album is Blue Flame. Uh-huh. It's I think it came out, is it 01 or 02, to a lot of, obviously, great acclaim. And I think Simone was Grammy nominated for the album.
Uh-huh.
He got 11 what are called preliminary Grammy nominations, which are the nominations that initially happen. I think it's a cut of 250 people. So I would say for a Palestinian musician, that was a big thing.
Yep. And great stuff. Great stuff. When did it come out? How long ago?
It was 01 or 02.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, well, I should mention that before that, the more rustic and traditional stuff that we were opening with was something from the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade's greatest hits. That was actually some traditional Libyan music, which an anonymous listener sent me with virtually no information about 10 years ago. So whoever you are, if you're listening tonight, a shout out to you for laying some good music on us. And we were just actually just playing that the vamp while we were battling the controls of the computer to get the Simon Shaheen that that Andrew brought us. And there's a reason that we're playing. There's a good segue, by the way, I thought. Between those two cuts, one sort of more deep and traditional, and the other kind of more polished. But there's a reason we're playing Simon Shaheen tonight, because he's going to be the star draw at a benefit which is coming up. You want to tell us about that, Andrew?
Sure, sure. The basically, Bill, the benefit is on December 2nd, this coming Tuesday, a week from today, I guess, or
right.
We're moving into Wednesday now.
Yep.
But basically, Simon is performing alongside, well, he and his ensemble, along with three or four other very talented artists, and of course his ensemble is very talented.
And we should say that he himself is a virtuoso on both the violin and the oud.
Yeah. He obviously composes that album. Blue Flame is entirely, with the exception of one track, I think his compositions, and yeah, I mean, he's obviously a real pleasure to see, real pleasure to watch. So this Tuesday, December 2nd, he'll be performing a benefit concert for Adela New York, the Coalition for Justice in the Middle East. And he will be joined by other great artists, Christine Moore, Kinan Azmi.
Really, Christine Moore, the Irish musician.
Christine Moore.
Oh, Christine Moore. Sorry, different one.
All right. Yeah. And she's a soprano, mostly opera, but she'll be doing Andalusian music.
Oh, wow, great.
Which will be great. Kinan Azmi will be performing with her, as well as doing an Edward Said tribute, which is a big thing.
Wow.
And then we also have Amir Al-Safar, who's an amazing trumpet player. So it's going to be basically a night of talent.
Sure,
all very complimentary, going along with Simone, of course. And so the benefit is for Adela New York, as I mentioned.
All right. Well, first, when and where is it?
It is at 7:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. on December 2nd.
At
St. Peter's Episcopal Church at 346 West 20th Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's a church with amazing acoustics, actually. Mm-hmm. Simone has performed there before, and I'm sure it'll be a pleasure to see him perform there again.
And technically, we're not supposed to give prices over the air because of our nonprofit status or something like that. But we should say that it is a benefit. So, but there is sort of a sliding scale.
Yeah.
But even the cheapest seats are more than you would pay for a movie in Manhattan, shall we say.
They are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. At the same time, we basically weighed out what his normal ticket prices would have been for a regular concert.
Right.
And put it somewhere in between.
Right. Okay. So reasonable.
Yeah.
Very
reasonable.
It's reasonable,
yeah. And, of course, I mean, yeah, it is sliding scale to some extent in the sense that there's a tiered pricing structure.
Mm.
So. Welcome everyone to join us, of course.
And, well, before you tell us a little bit about Adala, how can people get tickets beforehand? Is there a website or a phone?
Absolutely. The Adala New York website, which is www.alahny.org. That's our website, and basically tickets are available there. It's the first thing you see when you log on. And likewise, if anyone wants further information, we also provide an email address if somebody wants to contact us, and that's just info@adalany.org.
Okay. And that's A-D-A-L-A-H, adalany.org.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What does the word Adala mean?
It is translated literally. It's basically justice.
Mm-hmm.
And quite appropriately, the concert was nicknamed A Concert for Justice.
Okay, and so why don't you tell us a bit about Adala? What do they do?
Sure. Well, I joined Adala New York a little bit after they were founded. I think they were founded in 2006, as a result of the Israeli aggression in Lebanon at the time, the 2006 summer bombing of Lebanon.
Yes, of course.
Very unfortunate. And so Adala New York kind of formed. It was a coalition of organizations and individuals. And we've kind of transitioned into a lot of work centered around Palestine, of course, the Palestinian issue. And more specifically in recent times, we've been focusing on boycott, divestment, and sanctions in line with basically the Palestinian civil society's call for those actions. I can get, into some of the specifics. I mean,
sure.
We've had a relative to attempts at BDS thus far, successful campaign against...
Okay, BDS, one more time.
Boycott, divestment, and sanctions.
Gotcha.
I apologize.
BDS, yeah.
Yep. And we've had a reasonably successful campaign so far against Lev Levayev. He's the he's an Israeli diamond mogul. Also, I believe he's the wealthiest Israeli, and the 210th richest man on Forbes' list. Coincidentally, of course, he also, as a side note, is one of the largest settlement builders in the world.
Right.
So he greatly contributes to the obstacles to peace in the Middle East at this point. Aside from that, he's implicated in human rights violations in Angola. Here in New York, I believe there was a lot of trouble centered around he and his partner Shia Boimelgreen and their construction and work on various buildings. They bought a lot of real estate, and apparently the working conditions were not exactly ideal, we should say. So he got a lot of slack for that, well deserved. And Lev is an interesting man, and he's been the focus of this campaign.
All right, so he's making his money from blood diamonds.
Absolutely, making his money by dodging, in essence, the Kimberley process is almost dodged because
What is the Kimberley process?
Kimberley process is the process that was set up, essentially by the General Nations, the United Nations, set up this process for. It was supposed to, weed out the blood diamond process.
Mm-hmm.
But what they identified, I guess, as blood diamonds were basically only limited to when, like a rebel group, let's say, was involved in crimes surrounding, the diamond mining industry, in enslaving people, in like really torturing people. And so Levayev, basically, for a while now, has been in bed with the Angolan government. And in essence, out of it, obviously, he's got a monopoly on Angola's diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole history of it. It was it's very interesting if I'm not going to get into it, but basically if you read how Lev came to be friends with the Angolan government in terms of his friends and the weapons they supplied those who are now in the Angolan government when there was a civil war, it's very interesting. In addition, he originally was well known for, and this is something that's celebrated, ironically enough, he cracked the De Beers, monopoly on diamonds, which in essence meant that after De Beers even parted ways with South Africa's apartheid regime, basically Levayev continued to work with them. No hesitation there.
And, continued to work with the...
With the South African apartheid regime.
With the apartheid regime, really.
Absolutely,
At the same time, he was working with
No, this is prior to.
Prior to Angola.
This is basically his start in the diamond industry. And this is what he's, you know, he's notorious, I would say, but many would say famous for. It's really sad.
Well, and interestingly, despite this background, the Angolan government was willing to play ball with him.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, you know, well, basically, like I said, he did his share, or his friends did their share, to put him in a position to negotiate the monopoly he now has on Angolan diamonds. So ultimately, though, you know, not to get too bogged down in the specifics of that stuff, he's now basically funding something like it's ironic. He's A, funding the settlements, and at the same time building them, getting the contracts to build them. And so he's making money off the settlements while simultaneously putting that money back into the settlement.
All right, so he's also got construction outfits.
Absolutely.
Which are busy at work on the West Bank building illegal settlements.
Yeah, he sits atop Africa Israel, right? And in essence,
what is Africa?
Africa Israel is like a giant. I mean, you know, they're in so many industries, but essentially it's a giant corporation. It's like a conglomerate. He's got, I can't count, many, many subsidiaries under Africa Israel. Among them, there is Lidar, which is basically the construction company that has been implicated in building settlements, settlement blocks in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, and basically impeding upon the land of the people of Belain and Jeyus.
These are villages on the West Bank.
Yeah, absolutely. These are and this is he and his buddy or former partner, Shia Boimelgreen. And so my understanding of how this campaign came to be is that the people of these villages, you know, were in touch with individuals who are now in Adela, New York. And they basically said, look, we've identified this fella who is really heading. I mean, he's sitting atop these companies that are constructing the settlements while simultaneously getting the money, reaping the profits, and then putting it back into organizations like the, you know, I think it's the Jewish National, I forgot what it is. It's the land, the Land Redemption Fund? I forgot the specific name. And it basically, essentially what's happening there is like he's, you know, they are quote-unquote redeeming the land.
Right, yes.
Which, in essence, he's giving them money. They're buying up or forcing people out of their homes one way or the other. And then,
I thought that was a state entity, though, isn't it? The Jewish National Fund?
It's interesting how it works. It's basically like they found a way to privatize the land so that they're not really culpable for whatever is going on, what kind of discrimination that goes on there. I haven't read a lot into it, but from what I understand, basically it's like the state of Israel couldn't actually be it would be bad, quote-unquote, for them to be seen as, you know, maybe excluding Arabs from land purchases and things like that. So through the Jewish National Fund, they're basically able to do that. They're able to say, you know, the Jewish National Fund says, look, we're not, you know, we can't, we you know, it's Jews only, it's Jewish heritage or whatever the case is. And so in essence, for an Arab to build in a lot of towns within Israel, it's near impossible.
Right.
You know,
and all right. So, how is private money entering this process? I mean, I thought they were in the position. I mean, they bought up a lot of land and seized a lot of land, you know, going back to 48 and so on. But I thought that now they've sort of been in the process of selling off lands to for development for Jewish communities and so on.
In what sense? Well, I mean, in essence, what Levayev's contribution to it is the money he puts into these organizations, right? They go out and they buy up these, you know, these lands, or they realistically, a lot of the money goes towards, I'm sure, intimidating and forcing Arabs out of their homes. And then from that point, the land is quote unquote freed up.
All right, so they're actually purchasing it from the Jewish National Fund.
Yeah. Well, no. He's not even. I don't think Levayev in. Not in all the cases is he purchasing it. In some cases, I believe they have ownership of the land. But in some cases, he's simply hired as a contractor. I mean, Lidar is hired to build these settlement blocks.
Right.
By whatever entity, we'll say. And so he's basically like profiting off it and at the same time contributing back. And it's like an interesting recycling of funds, you know.
Well, this certainly warrants further investigation. And at the same time, you say he's got real estate developments here in New York City.
Actually, I think a Times article said he was buying everything up in sight. I think Levayev, and he's, because of his financial troubles now, I think he's got less ownership. But I know he was a majority owner in the Times building. He bought up the Arpthorpe.
The old Times building, the current Times building on 43rd Street.
Right, right.
Not the new one, which is under construction.
No. Right. Sorry. Yeah, right. The
classic Times building.
Right. And he also, I think, recently bought a large, basically, I think it was apartments or condos, the Arpthorpe building, which is almost like a complex. It's huge. And so I noticed that we were doing a little bit of research. I mean, my colleagues did the majority of the research, but essentially the people there were really concerned about being forced out of their homes. And I think that process began while Levayev was, again, the majority owner there. I think, he slowly moved towards selling away part of it or something like that. I think he just bit off more than he could handle, and fortunately the economy is beginning to take its toll on him. I recently read that Africa Israel's shares had lost something like 70% of their worth in the last month to 2 months. Great news.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of us have got a lot of high hopes riding on the economic downturn, that's for sure. And they're building this monstrosity high-rise directly across the street from me, and they just broke ground on it earlier this year, and there's been very little progress in recent weeks. I'm hoping that it's going to be like, you know, 1929, and they just, you know, the construction comes to a halt. And fortunately, in this case, it'll be before they actually erect an empty shell, which will just sit there and rot. But, course, you know, something on the scale of 1929 would also cause a lot of suffering as well. So it's kind of, you know, you're screwed either way. But certainly there will be silver linings to an economic downturn. It would be great for uncontacted tribes in the Amazon, for instance. So what has Adala, Coalition for Justice in the Middle East, what kind of pressure have you been trying to bring to bear on this Levayev character?
Sure. I mean, just to give you a few examples, let's see. Levayev was trying to build, I think we at one point read this, that he was basically trying to build an image, like a charitable image, as part of his, you know, publicity to sell his diamonds, to get his retail business moving. Likewise, I mean, I'm sure still for his, supplying. But, you know, among the things that I guess were touted as Levayev contributions, they named off UNICEF and Oxfam. Those were our first two that we read about. And it was very interesting to us that, you know, UNICEF and Oxfam were taking contributions from this guy. So the first thing that happened was, I think that we wrote to UNICEF, you know, we engaged them. And I can't remember if it was the first or the second, but basically UNICEF looked into the research we had done and said, we will not take contributions from this Levayev guy anymore,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Recently was that?
This was probably about a year ago, maybe a little bit under a year,
mm-hmm.
Very shortly after we began our campaign. And so they realized that there was something wrong with him. And announced, you know, publicly stated they would not take donations. I think that was the second. That was the latter. The former was Oxfam, when we contacted them, basically said, no, this guy has never contributed to us. And it was like a big slap in the face because, of course, in Israeli media, they said, organization basically says, this Levayev has never contributed, lies about, you know, contributions. And I think it turned out that it was like, maybe a periodical had made a mistake. But it seemed like he supplied that information. He was trying to build up his image. And so basically in isolating him from Oxfam and UNICEF, we ate away at kind of the strategy that he was going for.
Gotcha.
So Oxfam basically said, no, we've never gotten a contribution. We will not take any contributions from
They said that publicly.
Yeah, publicly. Mm-hmm. This was a public statement. It got a lot of coverage, which was excellent. In fact, the UNICEF announcement was all over the papers. I shouldn't say all over the papers. All over the news media. Reuters covered it, which was great. And I remember recently speaking to somebody who's a student at Baruch and said that that was something they came across while they were looking through articles and information, which is great to hear. So those were some of the steps. In addition, he has sponsored things like the Carousel of Hope Ball, which is the I think it's the Children's Diabetes Foundation, hosts this ball every year, you know, obviously to raise money. It's attended by the likes of Denzel Washington, Sidney Poitier, and many others. I mean, really, like, a star-studded event, including Babyface and other people. And
who's Babyface?
Babyface is Kenneth Babyface Edmonds. He's well-known in, like, kind of the soul R&B community. And he's been a producer for 20 years or so. I think, in addition, Quincy Jones was attending. Just a whole – it was a really star-studded event. And Levayev was slated to sponsor it again. He did sponsor it in 2006. And I think they didn't have it in 2007. So basically what ended up happening is the organization, after a lot of pressure and a lot of press releases – I mean, actually, I shouldn't say that. One press release, a lot of pressure, lots of information on the inside trying to tell them, look, you really shouldn't take contributions from this guy, and writing letters to the stars themselves – we eventually got him dropped off the list of sponsors. So those are a few areas. On the other hand, we've been making our inroads in the diamond industry, attending diamond conventions and conferences, you know, showing up and basically trying to inform his buyers of what he's involved in. And at the same time, again, with another tactic, showing up at his retail store when we can, which is on 62nd, I think, in Madison. And basically standing in front, a large group of us, 40 or 50 of us, and last year we sang Christmas carols making fun. You know, we had, not just Christmas carols, sorry, holiday carols, because, what's that song, Dreidel, Dreidel, Dreidel?
Yeah.
Our version was Boycott, Boycott, Boycott. So we've had some fun with it and basically have continued a very focused campaign. It's taken up probably 60% of our resources. And I think it's been well worth it. Other successes, he was slated to open a store in Dubai under his own name. He already had stores under other names through business partners. And very fortunately, we were able to stop that. I think we showed up in time and we got in touch with the UAE government there, put some pressure on, and basically they made an announcement that he would not receive a license to open a shop in his own name. So, you know, I think that we're not a huge group. We're a small coalition of folks and organizations here and there.
But very sharply focused, so it seems.
Very important. I think that sometimes lacks in the activist community. And we've really reaped the benefits to some extent here. And I think generally the settlement movement is going to be a large target for us. Mm-hmm. And Levayev's just really at the head of it.
All right, so he's taking up 60% of your resources. What about the other 40%?
Well, I mean, he got everything from cultural events, you know, here and there to, and I guess I could cite the fundraiser, the benefit concert as one, to, you know, again, other settlement activity. And then, of course, there are things like demonstrations against what's going on in Gaza, the siege that's completely unheard of. I mean, it's out of hand. Publicizing things like that and getting the message across there. Sometimes Levayev kind of touches on some of the other things we're doing as well anyway. You know, when you're building settlements all over the place and we're coming up with different issues related to the Palestinian cause, sure enough, you know, he pops up from time to time, I should say. And also people who work with him tend to pop up here and there. Like I said, I'd say 60 to 70% has been focused on Levayev. Even more recently, the United Kingdom was slated to move their embassy into one of his buildings, and we began a campaign.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah, it's
in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, uh-huh. Absolutely. And it was really a disgrace. And fortunately, folks started to write in The Guardian. We started to get the message out and get the word out, write to the UK, write to the representatives there, the ministers. And I think it started to have an effect, and so far, I don't want to say that things are finalized, but it looks like they're really backing off of the original decision to go with that. It's funny how things get reported in the media, and then suddenly they are no longer fact. And I think that's what people have to kind of recognize, is that individual has the ability to change something. Mm-hmm. It seems like that lacks. A lot of times I've been around the activist community, people don't realize the power that they have as an individual. And fortunately, Adele in New York has stepped up and kind of shown, you know, not to say anything about the rest of the community, but really, it seems like because of the Focus campaign, we've been able to show the kind of results that can come out of something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah.
And the situation in Gaza is just getting sporadic, at best, media attention, and it seems like it's really horrific. I mean, I think the last I heard was more than a week ago, they had once again run out of fuel at the power plant due to the blockade, and Gaza City was plunged into darkness, and I think that I haven't heard anything since then. Have you got an update on that situation?
I mean, quite honestly, no. I mean, there's not the media out of there, as you said, it's horrendous. You know, you basically end up relying on as much local media as you can, like my news agency and others. You know, it's like they're playing games with Gaza. You know, they open it for a little bit, they close it back up.
Exactly.
And it's I think it's a good indication.
And the United Nations has been protesting this, and you'd think that there would be.
Oh, it seems to have no effect.
You'd think that there would at least be some, you know, global media attention. The UN is protesting this closure of Gaza. You'd think that there would at least be some worldwide media outcry, and there's been very little.
Well, one more reason we're focusing on the settlement movement. Yeah. It seems like it's been a cancer in Israel, basically. I mean, the settlement movement has really started to make its way, its inroads in Israeli politics more and more. And it's ironic because, of course, it was originally the result of Israeli politics, right? People like Ariel Sharon pushing out those settlement policies and starting them. And now it's like the mantra they created that's coming back to haunt them. And so in turn, basically, it seems like Israeli politics just seem to go further right and right. And you've got this situation in Gaza where you can clearly see that there's like a contempt. I mean, clear contempt on the part of the Israeli government and some of the Israeli people regarding Gaza. I mean, you have to question how you could sit around while something like that's going on.
All right. Now, where do you see the link to the – I mean, just in terms of the basic moral stance, there's a link to the to the settlements, but
it's the moral sense, but also no, I mean, nonetheless, the settlement movement is having more and more of an effect. I mean, at the same time, the Israeli public is somewhat pushing away from it. It's starting to have more and more of an effect on Israeli politics, and I think that's evident in things like what happened about a month ago in Akka, the city of Akka, which is like a mixed town, basically. I mean, it's mostly Arab, I think, or maybe it's half-half. Mm. But basically, Akka's had riots, you know, and it was – and when people looked into what was going on, it was like the mayor and – the mayor himself, first off, was extremely Zionist and extremely right-wing. But furthermore, he had brought a lot of individuals from the settler movement out of – I think it was the West Bank – into Akka.
Which is in Israel proper.
Yeah. 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 And basically, these guys followed him in and – this is where you get those hardline policies. This is where you get the pure hatred of human beings. I mean, people talk about Hamas and they talk about, you know, Hezbollah and, you know, the hatred. It's interesting because it's like, you know, where else do you find, like, little kids who grow up learning to throw stones at little Palestinian girls walking to school? Where do you get individuals who at age 16 get to walk around with an M16 – right, on their farmland, and it's not like there's an aggressor. It's like they walk around a field and they see somebody standing on a farm that the person owns, and they open fire on them because they don't want them anywhere near their land. And it's really it's a cute thing.
Well, there's going to be a new administration both in Israel and in this country shortly.
Well, I think some of the analysis out there already says Israel is preparing to elect its Bush, so to speak. Which means, you know, the 8 years of horrendous policies that, while our system had a lot of problems, it seemed like those problems just escalated to a whole other level and another state.
All right, so who is
that? That is Netanyahu.
Oh, yes.
Basically, yeah. Bibi Netanyahu is Benjamin Netanyahu, yeah. Seems to be slated to win the election. And like I said, I mean, that's the analysis that's coming out of there. Out of Israel, that is. And I think
He's still with the old Likud, not with this new Kadima.
No, he's not. He's not with Kadima. In fact, his opponent, who is with Kadima, is Tzipi Livni.
Right.
And she was originally expected to win, and I think she did win the elections.
Right.
They got and they weren't able to build a coalition that was stable, and so she called for new elections.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are. It looks like Netanyahu will win, and Israelis are saying this is a reflection upon who we are. I mean, this is really a disgrace. And I think that's how we felt as Americans when George Bush got elected. I mean, you can say whatever you want about previous presidents, but the fact of the matter is I don't think we really got something this bad in at least 50 years, if ever. You know, you've got Nixon, you've got Reagan, who I can't understand why people idolize him, but you got Bush. I mean, it's like...
No, the whole Reagan glorification thing is totally out of whack, but Bush is just standing on Reagan's shoulders and took it much further.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The administration came
from the same place.
Yeah.
So basically, I mean, people can say what they want. Like, you may like Obama, that's great. But at the end of the day, I don't expect any changes in terms of...
Well, that was going to be my next question. I mean, certainly if we're acknowledging that Bush was something beyond, you know, the usual workaday evil of the system, shall we say. He was something extra special evil.
Right.
You know, presumably there's going to be some kind of a shift under Obama. And, you know, I'll say that the signals thus far have been kind of mixed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's his intention.
Right, I think so,
I think
too.
That he's a pragmatic individual. He's obviously extremely calculated, extremely well-prepared. I mean, I don't think we've seen the likes of anything, you know, like what Obama's campaign looked like in a long time. I mean, really, really well done. Great. But at the end of the day, you know, you got Rahm Emanuel.
Right.
I'll give him credit for apologizing to the Arab community for his father's comments.
Yes.
But no more credit than that. And you have, you know, you have other folks who are out there. They're just not.
His father, we should, no point in repeating him verbatim, but he made a pretty explicitly ugly and racist comment.
Right, right. And it goes in line with the fact that he, speaking
to an Israeli newspaper.
Right, right. And it goes in line with the fact that he, you know, was in the Irgun.
Right.
And basically was dubbed as a terrorist organization.
Yes.
Rightfully so.
Well, they called itself a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
It was one of the last groups on earth to openly self-identify as a terrorist organization before...
there you go. Another monster Israel may have created that's come back to affect it.
Okay, so on the other hand, though, I would say that his appointment that we just heard about for National Security Advisor, James Jones, is at least tentatively hopeful. He would seem to be from the more pragmatic wing of the ruling elites in this country. He was an early opponent of the Iraq War, despite the fact that he's a military man, former NATO commander.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't hear about that appointment. I'd been reading about his economic appointments, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I wasn't trying to take the sail from anyone's from anyone's wings there or whatever.
No, I believe in having a very... A very critical and distanced analysis of whatever new power structure is emerging in this country. You know?
Sure. Yeah. As people put it, look, we if you were part of the Obama push, you put him there. Now, you know, keep his feet to the fire. That's what you do. And I think with regard to the Israeli-Palestinian issue, I mean, yeah, there's some promise there. And it's true, actually, Obama had a lot of ties to Palestinians and many well-known Palestinians, including Electronic Intifada, founder Ali Abu Nami.
Oh, really? What was his
relationship? I mean, basically Obama was his local, you know, his congressman.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I think Ali mentioned, you know, having invited him to many events and having seen him there.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes in line with his acquaintance with Rashid Khalidi and as well with Edward Said, mm-hmm. The late and great. So, I mean, I think that, you know, this country wasn't ready for somebody having critical views of Israel and being elected, and I don't think anyone should have expected anything otherwise. If they did, I hope they were building a movement to counter it then.
Well, it's going to be interesting if Bibi gets in Israel. It's going to be interesting to see how those two guys get along.
It'll show the true colors of Israel, and I think it'll lead us towards being towards a more honest approach.
Heighten the contradictions, as the Marxists say. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see. It's mere seconds of 1 o'clock in the morning here on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg. We're speaking with Andrew Mahad El-Kadi. And one more time, the benefit for...
The concert benefit for...
For Adala, the Coalition for Justice in the Middle East.
Yep.
It's going to be 1 week from tonight.
Yep. December 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at St. Peter's Episcopal Church on West 20th Street. We'd love to see you there. It'll be a night of extreme talent.
And if you want more information, you can go to the Adala website, which is adalany.org. That's adalahny.org. And you can purchase your ticket online, I assume.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So why don't we give the listeners another taste of what they'll be hearing 1 week from tonight. Do you have another cut that you recommend? How about Bosporacine's Under the Moonlight? What's that like?
That's a slower tempo, and it's very nice. I should have said Simone did not compose two pieces on the album. I believe this was composed by a late composer and friend of his.
Hmm.
And it's an amazing piece, more focused on the traditional takasim, like oud play.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Why don't we do that? Should we do that?
I think so.
Okay. If I can figure out how to get this thing to work. Let's see. Hello. There we are. All right, a little oud fusion there from Simon Shaheen and his album of 2000, Blue Flame, his classic album. And if you want to hear more from Simon Shaheen, well, you can do so 1 week from tonight at the benefit for Adala New York, the Coalition for Justice in the Middle East. If you want more information, you can just go to their website at adalany.org, adalany.org. Big thanks to Andrew Muhad El-Kadi for joining us tonight, playing this music on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. And let's hear a little bit more of it while we see Andrew off, because he's got to leave and wake up early in the morning. So let's hear a little bit more from Blue Flame, and I'll be back in just a minute.
Join Adala New York for the Coalition for Justice in the Middle East on Tuesday, December 2nd at St. Peter's Church, 346 West 20th Street, for an evening of wonderful music featuring world-renowned Palestinian performer Simone Shaheen. The night will be a fundraiser for Adala New York, whose work has gained international recognition as a leader in the movement for justice in Palestine. Tickets are available at www.adalanewyork.org or by calling 646-961-3755.
Well, there do indeed seem to be either some strange technical glitches or some even stranger special effects going on in that cart. But nonetheless, the basic information was there, and we heard a lot of Simone Shaheen's enchanting music. So once again, if you want to see him live in concert in a very intimate setting, 1 week from tonight at St. Peter's Church, which is at 346 West 20th Street, 7:30 p.m., December 2nd, or just get your ticket online at the Adala NY website. That's adalahny.org. And once again, big ups to Andrew Muhad El-Kadi for joining us tonight and informing us and laying the music on us. So, well, now we have to give it up for Weaponry with Tom Whisker, which is coming up next forthwith. So please do stay tuned to listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City, where this has been the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade with me, Bill Weinberg. And all right, well, why don't we go out with a little transition from the refined to the rustic and go out with some more of this wonderful traditional Libyan music, which some anonymous listener laid on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Here, let's see, way back in the day. Here, let's play this cut. I don't think we heard this cut yet. See you next week. Salam alaikum.
Remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.